This is Herb Montgomery with Renewed Heart Ministries, and we welcome you to this week's weekly podcast. Our feature text this week is Luke 18, verse 1, where it says, "Then Jesus told them a parable about their need to pray always and to not get discouraged." And this week, we're going to be looking at the parable here in Luke 18 that starts out chapter 18, which is referred to by many as the parable of the unjust ruler or the importunate woman. And I want to make it clear from the beginning that we're not going to be looking at this parable through a domesticated or a conventional or what some call an empire-approved interpretive lens. There are key phrases and clues that Jesus uses here. And these phrases, they tell us explicitly that this is not a parable concerning prayer by those in places of privilege among our human societies, but this is a parable rather instead for those who are being made by the, or a parable that's for those who are not disadvantaged, but not just passively disadvantaged, but actively oppressed in their state of being disadvantaged. So here, let's look at those phrases and those clues first. The first one's in verse 2, where Jesus says that it was a ruler who neither feared God or had respect for people. The word here for judge, as some translations have it, is not judge in the case of someone who tries a case, but rather it's a magistrate or a ruler who presides over basically the affairs of a government or governance. And Luke 18:3, Jesus says it involves a widow. And widows in the first century, especially within the patriarchal culture among the Jews, were among those who were oppressed by those at the top of what was then an economical privilege pyramid. And verse 5, Jesus has the judge saying, "I will give her justice." So what this widow was pleading for was equity and what today would be called by some social justice. In Luke 18:7, the phrase is used. Jesus sums up the parable by saying, "Will not God grant justice to this, to his chosen ones who cry to him day and night?" Now this cry to him day and night is code. This phrase would have hearkened Jesus's listeners back to Israel's slavery in Egypt when they were slaves. And it says in Exodus 2:23, that they also groaned under their slavery and cried out when out of their slavery they cried for help, and that cry rose up to God. Within the narrative of the Exodus, God is portrayed in chapter 3 as saying to Moses, "I have observed the misery of my people who are in Egypt. I have heard their cry on account of their taskmasters." And this is not a parable about praying. If you're familiar with this phrase, about first world problems. These are not parables by rulers or judges, or those treated with preference by rulers and judges. This is not a prayer to get a promotion at an already high-paying job, or to get an A on an exam at an Ivy League school, or that our favorite sitcom on television won't get canceled this coming season. These are prayers prayed by those who cry out to the advocate God of the oppressed and the disadvantaged that we see in the Jesus of Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. These are prayers to God about oppression and violence and injustice. It's prayers for God to put these things right. And it's prayers being made by those who are being marginalized and mistreated and stereotyped and mischaracterized and whose plights are being ignored by most. Jesus is saying to these, keep crying out to God. Don't give up. But this is not a pray-only parable either. This is a parable where not only did the woman pray, but she was vigilant and standing up against injustice along with her continued prayers. Jesus is saying to the oppressed, basically, keep pushing for justice. Vertically, yes, keep praying to God, but also horizontally towards your fellow humanity, and change will come. Jesus is saying to the oppressed that God is with you. God is, again, as we've said so many times, the advocate God, and this God stands in solidarity with you. Injustice, oppression, and violence is a violation of everything that the God we see in Jesus is about. And in Jesus, we see this advocate God engaged in a formidable struggle against all oppression, all injustice, all violence. And as I've said so many times before, yes, God even loves the perpetrators of oppression. But God, the God we see in Jesus, seeks to overthrow injustice through winning the perpetrators of injustice over to the side of the oppressed. And this God does this by being the first to take a stand in solidarity with the oppressed. And this God, again, loves all, both the oppressed and the oppressors. Yet this God is seeking to heal everyone as well, both the oppressed and the oppressors. This God is at work to heal the oppressors by setting them free from the systemic evil that they themselves are victim of. And this God is seeking to heal those who are being oppressed by putting to right the very injustice that is crushing them. The greatest proof that I can give you this week that God, that the God we see in the Jesus story is an advocate God for the oppressed, the greatest proof I can give to you of that is the resurrection. And I know that the historical reality of the resurrection is under fire within our scientific naturalist worldview today, and that's okay. But just stop for a moment and catch what the story truth of the resurrection really is. The good news that the early apostles proclaimed was not that someone had been crucified. That happened all the time to anyone who stood up to Roman oppression. And nor was it that someone who had died had come back to life. And that, although strange to us today, it wouldn't have shocked anyone in the first century. They had all kinds of stories, both Jewish and Hellenistic, of people who post-mortem had come back. What shocked the Jewish and Roman world was that this specific Jesus, whom was deemed as a threat to both the Jewish and Roman political, economical, and religious privilege pyramids, whom these systems had joined together in crucifying, this specific Jesus God had chosen to stand in solidarity with, and had resurrected this same Jesus and established this Jesus along with his radical teachings about justice and equity, love and mercy rather than sacrifice. God had established this justice as Lord. And what had been prophesied by the prophets, that God would one day put all injustice, oppression, and violence to right, had actually begun through the resurrection of Jesus the Christ. In Acts 17:6, you can see that one of the things that was being accused, that the apostles were being accused of, is that they were turning the world upside down. And what we have to notice also is the early preaching of these apostles, these Jesus followers, wasn't about how to get to heaven after one died. It was about turning the world upside down and placing it right side up once again. And the resurrection proves that God is not standing in solidarity with the political superpowers, think Manifest Destiny, nor is God standing in solidarity or present with within the most exclusive, most holy central places of religious systems of sacrifice. Rather, the resurrection proves that God was standing with and revealed in the very one whom had been crucified by these religious, economic, and political systems. And there is good in this world worth fighting for. The world is worth saving. John 3:17 says it, and we'll look at that in just a moment. When we encounter sickness in this world, whether it's social, political, economic, or religious, the one and only remedy is the gospel or the good news that was proclaimed by the apostles about the resurrection of this same Jesus, who was the victim of these sicknesses himself. In John's gospel, Jesus tells us, indeed, God did not send the Son into the world to condemn the world, but in order that the world might be healed through him. Again, there is a good in the world worth fighting for, and Jesus came so that we might see it and work to save it. Before we wrap up this week, I want to close with the two centers. The cross is the center of appeasement-based theology, and it's usually being used in the hands of those who are at the top of privilege pyramids, whether it's religious, political, or economic, and it's used to take the gospel to the oppressed out at the knees. The resurrection Jesus's resurrection was the center of the apostles' gospel in the book of Acts, and it was the center for a reason. The resurrection undoes and reverses the unjust act of the cross by those systems of oppression. And it is this reason, and it was understood by the apostles, that places the resurrection at the center of all rightly understood liberation theological systems. And we can't make a mistake about it. Making the cross the center of one's theological understanding speaks volumes about the character of the God at the heart of that theology. Yet placing the resurrection as God's response to the crucifixion of Jesus by human hands also speaks volumes about the character of God at the heart of this theology. Both centers place their adherents on a trajectory concerning how they treat the marginalized. And it's a lot to ponder, I know, this week, but I want you to meditate a little bit on these two centers. It's time to revisit the Jesus story of Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, as well as the preaching of those in the book of Acts, and to abandon conventional domesticated empire-approved systems of interpretation. Again, the cross is the center of how to get to heaven gospels, but the resurrection is the center of how to bring heaven on earth, how to restore heaven to earth once again. And may God help us hear what the story, the Jesus story, is really telling us for the sake of our fellow humanity that's crying out to God day and night for justice. Heart group application this week. This week I'd like you to go back and actually reread Matthew 5, 1 through 11, and Luke 6, 20 through 26, and contemplate which end of the present privileged pyramid, top or bottom, that Jesus is saying the arrival of his kingdom blesses, reversing their state, their present state, and which end Jesus's kingdom, Jesus is saying, was going to challenge. And see if you can't outline some of the changes that Jesus is outlining for both those at the top of our social constructs, as well as for those at the bottom. And after you've made this outline, number two, I want you to spend some time sitting with Jesus, prayerfully contemplating these differences, and journal what Jesus shares with you. And then number three, share whatever you discover with your heart group this upcoming week. Till the only world that remains is a world where Christ's love reigns. Wherever this finds you this week, keep living in love, loving like Jesus. I love each and every one of you. And remember, God does too. We'll see you next week.